Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. I want to wish all of you who are celebrating Christmas a very Merry Christmas, and it's also the start of Hanukkah this evening. If you're celebrating Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever you do, whatever your faith is, I'm wishing you all a very happy, healthy, peaceful holiday season. I am going to air a conversation I had with Joel Veenstra. And you might know Joel because of the Improv Revolution. If you've attended that here at UCI, it's fantastic. But Joel is the chair of the Department of Drama right here at UCI at the Claire Trevor School of the Arts. He's head of stage management. He has a new book out, which is fantastic. It's called Working Together in Theater, Collaboration and Leadership. It's a book written by the late Robert Cohen and Joel Veenstra. It's a fantastic book. I'm diving into it now. If you visit the show blog at getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org, you can learn more about Joel and his role right here at UCI. He specializes in stage management, improvisation, and collaborative production. And his complete bio, all the incredible things he has done, is on the show blog. I do want to mention a little bit about the late Robert Cohen. This comes from the Claire Trevor School of the Arts website. I put a link to this. So Robert Cohen actually passed away just a little over a month ago at the age of 86. He was a towering figure in the theater world. Cohen was a founding faculty of the Department of Drama at UC Irvine. He joined UCI in 1965 after earning his undergraduate degree from UC Berkeley and his DFA from Yale. He was instrumental in shaping the drama department, and he served as its founding chair for 25 years and established the MFA in drama program. He was a transformative leader in theater education, direction, and scholarship, and created programs that set national benchmarks, including the Students' Repertoire Theater, the first of its kind in the United States. Under his leadership, UC Irvine's drama program emerged as a preeminent training ground for actors, directors, and scholars, solidifying its reputation as a leader in theater education. And I put a link, you can read more about him, but I just wanted to tell you a little bit about him because he collaborated with Joel in writing this wonderful book. And again, you can read more about Joel because he has quite the background. It's outstanding. And I don't want to give too much away because we have this great conversation coming up right now. Enjoy. I'm in conversation with Joel Veenstra. He is the chair, Department of Drama, and head of stage management with the Claire Trevor School of the Arts. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you, Janine. So happy to be here.
Did I get all your titles correct?
Oh, sure. I'm not too particular, but I feel honored to be where I'm at.
You know, I mean, I left out professional stage manager, production manager, producer, improviser. I mean, as I said before we started, I am really blown away when I look at your bio, which for listeners, it's on the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Wow. Could you tell me, I want to take this way back. Like, when did you gravitate towards theater and improv?
Well, theater was middle school or even earlier. You know, I, as a very young child, my mom got me interested in arts and brought me to all sorts of artistic things. And that was really a lovely experience, especially as, you know, early in my life, my parents got divorced and it was a little challenging. And so art became an avenue to connect with people and to hear other stories that were out there and kind of also live in someone else's space. You know, so you had a different point of view and lens. Sometimes when you're having challenging things, it's a really lovely thing to do. And so it became a really wonderful outlet for me to connect with people, but also then to kind of feel a way of exploring other people and empathy. And then, you know, in terms of improvisation, early in my college career or even later high school framework, I saw an improv team for the first time. And I remember it just being transformative because there are these folks that were on stage, and rather than having a script that were locked into a specific outcome or framework, they were just free to do whatever they wanted. And there was such a joyfulness and playfulness with that group. They're called River City Improv. And it was just amazing and just kind of transformed my perspective in terms of what was possible in the world and From that, I started an improv team myself, and then just has continued to blossom and grow. And I've both performed improvisationally in a wide range of spaces, then also have had the opportunity to augment that to think about how the improvisational skills can be applied to your life in many different frameworks to be more present, aware, and connected with other individuals in terms of how we
Yes.
engage with one another.
And I saw that. I know I'm going fast forward, but I saw that you do work with businesses and helping people because I feel like, yes, people jump into their 9 to 5, but they forget the power of play and to think outside the box, as I'll call it, being able to just think quickly and creatively and openly without self-judging and critiquing and negative self-talk is everything, right?
Absolutely. It sounds like you've done this before. I mean, it's
I've
like
taken
you've,
improv. I studied a
yeah.
little at the Groundlings and
Yes.
UCB.
Love it.
And I saw you first at the amazing Coupe de Comedy, correct? And when did you launch that?
We launched that in 2013, and then it ran for over a decade. We took 1 year off for the pandemic, and then our next year we did a virtual version, which was a huge success.
Remember.
And now we're a little bit on a hiatus with that. So because of the nature of student involvement and kind of where we're at in the world, it felt like that was a good time to take a pause this year, and we'll reevaluate if we bring it back in some form in the future. But it was an incredible opportunity to bring hundreds of professional improvisers and comedians to the campus and have them do workshops and shows and panels for the community, which was all free and a great opportunity to inspire folks. And it was exciting to see alumni go to that and then leverage some of those relationships professionally, as well as some of those learning outcomes, after UCI. So it was really a wonderful, wonderful thing. And more wonderful things will come, and they'll just kind of continue to evolve as that is the nature of the world.
And I want to add to that you've made it intergenerational.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, both in terms of the audience that are participating and the workshop attendees that were participating, but we also have done some intergenerational explorations where we actually had improvisational classes here at UCI that brought in older generation with our college generation, and they really learned and grew with one another. And it was both a transformative experience for both the students and the older individuals that participated. And they still will talk about that and share, when I see them in the area, because they're all kind of local
Yes.
folks,
Yeah.
as about how much of a life-giving experience is for both parties, which I think is, the ideal space of what we want within collaboration and learning.
Yeah. I attended for several years Coupe de Comedy, and I remember a lot of the teachers, the workshops, and the performances. And jumping into a workshop, yes, that you get a little nervous. Maybe you have done this, or you haven't done this. Next thing you know, you're walking around pretending you're a giraffe. I mean, it just is super cool to, as I said, just jump into something without overthinking. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's kind of one of our challenges today, as we have so much access to so much information and content and things that are going on, and knowledge about how things work, that then there's often this overthinking about how do we engage with things. And sometimes that works against us versus just kind of going with the moment of what is and listening to what's actually in the moment, because sometimes we can get clogged up with all of our preconceived conceptualizations that don't actually serve us as well as we might think.
Yes. So here's my pitch for you to bring it back, Coupe de Comedy. So I have done a lot of research and writing about the mental health crisis that we're in. And I know for Gen Z listening on up, I do know that they have had a hard time making connections and being out back in person. I'm sure you know this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Being back in person, communicating. I've even gone to different events. I went to a NAMM event called She Rocks, and people are not talking. They're on their phones. They're uncomfortable being back in person. So, well, I think one of the benefits, and I think you'll agree, is comedy just connects people with humor, with being silly, and I feel like we need that more than ever.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a universal thing that is necessary for us to survive as a culture. I mean, we really need to learn what it's like to actually listen to somebody versus pre-labeling them or thinking we know what they think based on what we observe in initial passing, or
Yes.
even worse, like, like not observing, right? Like it's so easy on a break today to where, historically people would start talking on breaks or kind of seeing what people were doing. Now everyone just goes immediately to their digital device and they're
Right.
not in the space. And when you're
Yes.
not in the space, you're not connecting with those that are around you. And so you are staying kind of entrenched or in your own space, in your own world. And in order for us to move forward, I think through the challenges that we're facing today is actually seeing one another and acknowledging one another. And even when we don't agree with one another, being open to have a dialogue about what that is versus simply labeling them as the other or the person that's against me. Because certainly those might be in the world and might even be in the person, but if we don't talk and listen and try to understand, we're going to go nowhere because we just see the other
I
person
agree.
almost as an object, right? So we've got this rock here. I can't change the rock can't change me. There's no forward path there. I have a
Yes.
rock in my way.
Yes.
But in actuality, this is a person. This isn't a digital device. This isn't a one-off thing. This is a human being that
Yes.
is a miracle of all time coming up to this moment to make them who they are. And so it's kind of remarkable if we can actually sit in that space of actually seeing and listening. And for my own self personally, I've been exploring a lot of what does it mean to not engage with my digital device, right? Like, so what does it mean to for some time to just put that away? Because we have this kind of infinite, almost godlike capacity to access anything in the palm of
My
our
God.
hand. And yet we're finite beings. And oddly enough, I find that when I don't have that infinite capacity, I'm more connected with my family, more connected with my friends. I feel better about myself and the world. My mental health seems to be in a better space. But
Yes.
it's so hard because those devices and that infinite possibility and that pseudo connection is so strong that it's hard to kind of step away from it.
Yes. And it's interesting you say pseudo connection, because even the students that I connect with at UCI or outside of UCI, they'll say they know they're scrolling to death. They know that they have this addiction. And oftentimes when I do these activities, I'll say, "Oh, if you want to follow us on Instagram," and they'll say, "I don't have Instagram." And I'll say to them, "Great. Awesome. You don't have TikTok? Amazing. That's fantastic. Having a life off of your phone. Yay." Yeah.
It's fantastic. And going back to the improvisation, like in order for someone to do improvisation well, like you can't have that distraction. You have to be in the
Yeah.
space together with somebody because you're creating something or accomplishing a task together that you need one another to do.
Yeah.
And I think there's a little bit of this framework that in, the life, real world, as it were, that we feel like we can accomplish anything without anyone else's help because I can go on Amazon, I can order something, it comes here tomorrow. It seems like it was instantaneous, almost like magic, like no one is involved. But if you think about all the people that it took to make that happen and actually think about the reality versus the magic that happens within our digital space,
Yeah.
it's pretty profound how much we could not function without other people.
I know. I know. But you bring up a really good point. One of the reasons I do love improv is because you have to have this fine-tuned sense of listening. You have to listen, look for the details. Especially, I remember the challenge of UCB for me, the yes and. And if someone says, "Hi, I'm an astronaut, Joel." And you'd say, "Yes, and I can't wait to hear your astronaut song that you wrote." And so it's being open to and not saying, "Oh man, is that stupid?" Yeah.
And underlying that as well as this element of whatever you bring to the table is enough. That if you're given that offer of, I want to hear your astronaut song, let's say I've never sung before, but whatever I
That would
sing,
be
that you all, but like if I would sing something, and then the thing that within a lot of improvisational training over time, within the ones that I most appreciate, is this element of whatever you bring to the table is the right thing. And so rather than getting that kind of sense of judgment over, I don't know how to swing sing, or I don't know what to exactly
Yes.
sing, you could
Yes.
sing Happy Birthday, and that could be your astronaut song, and that's what's
That's
for you
true.
in that moment. And
Yes.
that's the truth of that moment. And so there is this underlying element of that what you bring to the table and what you are is worthwhile. And I think also within our culture and society, we have a lot of this element of us not being enough from our advertising campaigns, from our way that our structures of hierarchy and power are. There's a lot of these elements of like you aren't enough, and improvisation, by nature of how it's constructed in most of its forms, is that you are enough, and what you have is enough to bring to the table, and we accept that offer both in terms of a verbal exchange or kind of idea exchange, but also as a performer or as an audience member or anyone that's in the space sharing the space together is enough. And
Great
it's hard
message.
when well it's I believe it to the core of my being. And it's also challenging around the holiday times that sometimes our families give us different messages than that. And
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
kind of an element of like internalizing that I know this to be true, even when external things tell me something different. And it's a very hard thing to do. And either a lot of improvisation or a lot of therapy can help, or a lot of support things. But
Yes. Yes.
it's hard because our culture is all about kind of this lens of how are you not enough? And I'm a big believer that both improvisation and my approach to education and life in general is, trying to encourage people that you are enough and that you are valued and worthwhile in who you are right now.
That's beautiful. So, congratulations, because was it October that you took on this new position?
July
Oh,
was the
July,
official
excuse
start.
me.
Well, yeah,
Okay.
no, July was the official start.
Okay.
But then, October was when actually the school year started. So,
Okay.
It felt a little bit like summer vacation, and then it really came like a tsunami of unique situations all within my first quarter as chair. And it's thank you for the congrats.
Absolutely. That's why I
Yeah.
reached out to you. I thought I want to talk to him because when I looked at your bio, which I'd like to touch on a little bit,
Yeah.
I was just thinking, what a road to get here. I mean, would you ever imagine that this would be your life?
Never. Never. And yet I feel so overwhelmingly blessed in what I've had what I've accomplished, the people I've worked with. I mean, it's a bit mind-blowing, and I'm so incredibly grateful at how the things essentially came together. And often one of the lesser known things about academia is that every several years you have to actually compile all the things that you've done over that last period and lay it out. And every time I do that, it's quite an effort. And I'm always surprised at how on earth did I do all of this? I've got to try to do less so I can be more present. But it's kind of hard because I love what I do, and I really like
Yes.
taking opportunities. And so,
Yes.
it when you're in that space, it fuels you, and it's a little bit like wind in the sail, that it becomes a lot easier. Yeah. So and it's also good to be mindful of your own limitations and capacity. So
I know.
I'm still working on
But I
that.
do sense because it's so purpose-driven and meaningful, and it doesn't just impact you, it impacts so many people that you just love what you do. So you say a lot of yes ands, you know.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's amazing.
Thank
So
you.
I want to talk about, not going to get to your entire bio. Where did you grow up? Was it?
I grew up in Dearborn, Michigan, right outside of Detroit, and
Okay.
that's the home headquarters of Ford Motor Company, and also one of the most diverse population in terms of Middle Eastern populations and per capita. And so I had quite a diverse group of friends. It was also on the outside of Detroit, and so I worked in Detroit a few summers and got to see that lens as well of great culture, diversity, challenges. And so I lived there my younger life. As I grew older, I moved out to Grand Rapids, where I went to college at Calvin College and created a career there. Did that for a number of years, and was very blessed to have a full group of clients that I do film, theater, and video work with.
Great.
And yeah, I was very blessed in that, and thought, I essentially could do this for the rest of my life, or I could take a leap and a risk and go out to Los Angeles and see what might be possible. And so thankfully, my partner was open to that, and we moved out. And within about a month after we were married, and were able to be very blessed out in Los Angeles, working in the film industry for a little while. Went back to grad school for stage management, and then worked professionally for a little while before coming back here. And it's been about 12 years now I've been here, and it's been a great time here
Wow.
at
And
UC Irvine.
I think okay, so I know you you were in Second City, you were in Iowa West, but I see also Stages Theater, and I actually took some improv classes there. I'm wondering if what year was that?
Oh,
Long
You
time
know,
ago.
a long time ago. So
Okay.
over a decade. Yeah. It,
Okay, now.
uh, yeah,
Okay.
yeah. So
But that was a great place. I loved it.
yes. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, we're at such an interesting time post-pandemic. I find my recollection of history a
Yeah.
little fuzzier, because I think that was such a challenging and I would dare say traumatic experience for us as a society.
Oh, definitely.
So there's a little bit of that memory challenge that I think comes within that space. And then, the also ripple is just how that affected, like you were mentioning, our human interactions, which is,
Yes.
how do we reorient to that, which is a unique thing. And then also the arts. I mean, there's a number of improvisational theaters are no longer here, and a number of theaters are no longer here, and the whole field is kind of taking a moment of contraction because of the nature of, we're going on the direction of getting back into a stronger economy. But if you don't have a strong economy, people don't have extra funds to go out and see
That's
theater
right.
or those type of things.
Yes.
So we're in a unique space in history, and even though there's a lot of challenges in the world, I'm hopeful that by nature of who we are as a species, that the pendulum will shift back and we will, continue to rebuild. And even through present or near future challenges, I just see the heart of people wanting to be helpful and loving and supportive of people, that I hope will, continue to shine through.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, how do you decide on the productions? Do people pitch you ideas for productions? Does it come from students? Where does that come from?
That's a great question. And it's something that we and every other educational institution in the States wrestle with, because it's a difficult thing, because every year you have only so many slots of where what how many productions you can do, and there's a host of different productions that you potentially could do. And so usually in the new year, we tend to get together a committee of faculty members to start talking and reading scripts. We also tend to put out a survey in the fall that gets our students' input, as well as having, opening up that if students have ideas, they should send them to us. And we've done this in almost our, we're almost coming up on our 60th anniversary as an institution that's always had arts in the mix. And there's never been a perfect system to how to figure out the next season, because not only are you trying to find interesting shows that challenge your students and your audience, or kind of excite them in what you're doing in terms of the entertainment or intellectual or exploratory element, but you also have a wide variety of student needs, because we have a graduate population of stage managers and designers and music directors and actors, and all of these different populations have different needs. And so trying to do this cross-section of how all of this will best serve them, as well as what creates some opportunities of exposure and representation on stage. So one of the things that I'm proud of this season, that we're not bringing major light to it, but I do think it's something to acknowledge, is that the majority of our shows this season are all female protagonist led, where,
Great.
if you look at the history of productions, and you look at the nature of people, right, the male female split is about 50-50, and then you have some binary folks non-binary in the mix as well. But of the course of human history, the majority of the stories are about male people and male identifying narratives. And so there's over 50%, or roughly 50% of the population, that don't get the lead, them seeing it themselves as a main character, right? And
Yeah.
so then there's this kind of interesting thing of, like, if I'm not if my who I am as a person isn't worthwhile in terms of the main thrust of the story, then do I have that value? And that's amongst gender lines, but it's also amongst the wide variety of ethnic identifiers or
Sure.
national identifiers. And again, it goes back, because I wish there was an easy solution to this, but it goes back to that element of almost like shelf space of, we've got four or five shows that we're doing in a season, and how do we represent people well in ways that then don't
Yes.
ostracize other people?
That's
So
true.
one of the new things that we're doing this season is we're doing our main stage season, but we're also trying to elevate and support in some ways what we're calling the Emergent Series, which is our ally or student organizations. We have Black Door for Black artists. We have Brown Bag Theater Company for Hispanic Latinx artists. We have Brick Theater for LGBTQ plus artists. And we have Theater Walk, which is revitalizing itself for Asian identifying artists. as kind of key student organizations that also are producing work. And so we're trying to elevate both in terms of marketing, but also providing a little financial support to them so
That's
that we
great.
can kind of help provide more opportunities and not say that we don't want you in the main stage season or not saying that your stories aren't valued, but how do we elevate as many people as possible in as many ways as possible within the challenges and limitations of what we have
Right.
within the
Yeah.
constructs we have. So
Yeah.
yeah, so that's what I'm excited about
That's
currently, and
amazing.
that's how we do it. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Anything else you'd like to add about upcoming events or anything going on?
Absolutely. I know it's so shameless, but I
Do
want to
it.
note that
Say
I have a book that's just come out called Working
Please.
Together Collaboration Theater. It's actually a revision, second edition of Robert Cohen, who is our founding chair here in the drama department, and an incredible individual, and has had such a long history, and was actually worked here for 50 years as on the faculty, which is remarkable, and it was such an
Wow.
inspiration to me. And so I felt so blessed to be able to have his blessing based on my thoughts to do this revision. And sadly, he just passed away this
Oh.
past month, which is tragic
Yeah.
and really hard amongst the many challenges that we faced this quarter. But I am, I'm very proud and honored to kind of carry on his legacy through this new book, and I hope folks will check it out. It can feel a little bit like a textbook, but I really hope that it would be a broad audience type of book to look at how do we work in theater that then might be able to apply within other people's just general working together, because everything is about human interaction, and the theater
You
does it in a
bet.
very interesting way. So
Yes. I'll put a link to the book up on the show blog
that'd be
for
lovely.
listeners. Yeah, the listeners, it'll be getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And then the website for the Claire Trevor. You want to give that out?
Yeah, sure. It's arts.uci.edu. And if you go on that, if you do arts.uci.edu/events, you can see all of our current and upcoming events. We have two productions that we're doing this quarter, which is super exciting, this upcoming quarter in the winter.
Okay.
One is called Gloria by Brandon Jacob Jenkins, who just recently won a Tony for his work on Broadway, and he has another Broadway production. And he's been so kind to come and talk to our company about his work, and we're actually going to have a public event, I believe, on 3:30 on January 31st, which will be our opening night, and he will talk to the public and have a little bit of a talk back about his work, and then we'll open the show, which is super exciting.
That's great.
And yeah. So I hope folks will come out and check that out, as well as our other season offerings.
Okay, and as this gets closer, I can mention it again on the show.
Love it.
Yeah, that sounds great. I want to thank you so much. This was wonderful. I look forward to connecting again.
Likewise, likewise. And congrats on your book as well. I'm so excited. So for
Thank you.
that, and so appreciative of all you do in this space to uplift and help people and
Thanks, Joel.
inspire people. You bet. Thanks, Janine. Take care.